Thank you. This morning we all made the decision to come to church. Now I do say that each one of us has a certain routine that we follow on Sunday morning. We have a particular route that we take, one that leads from our home to the church at 35th Street Northwest, Washington, D.C. Now several of you take the bus or walk, meaning that your routine is established according to the bus route or the walking distance. Some of you drive your car, usually selecting the shortest way to get to the church. Now, those of you who were paying attention this morning, and depending on where you live, you understood that today's routine might require a little modification. You see, once a year in the month of October, there is an event called the Marine Corps Marathon. Many individuals train for months just for the opportunity to participate in this exhausting experience. Now, this matters to us because the marathon route is closed to vehicular traffic, including the bridges and the roads leading into the city. Many of the streets in town are blocked off, restricting access to the roads that lead to church. Now, those of you who were paying attention, you simply proceeded to Plan B, figuring out another way into town. Those of you who forgot about this yearly event, you were reminded by those barriers set in place, denying you access to your usual approach into town. Now, we notice this quite a bit as we go about our daily routine. Our weekly morning habit, it might include a visit to the local Starbucks, looking forward to our usual order of a latte and perhaps coffee cake. But one fine morning, when we arrive, we discover that the door is locked with a sign posted, closed, due to an electrical problem. From time to time in my apartment building, we receive a notice telling us that the water will be shut off on a particular day and time for minor repairs. And if for some reason we should forget about it, we are reminded when we turn on the faucet and nothing happens. Now, these things come about and we are forced to make other arrangements. Now, these experiences, they may be inconvenient, annoying, we might find them frustrating, but they are usually temporary. Each has a particular purpose in mind, and once that purpose has been accomplished, things return to normal. So it is not so much the barrier that restricts and denies, but rather our reaction to it. For instance, when we were not granted entry to Starbucks, we looked around us and we decided to go across the street to Einstein's. You know what? We discovered that we really do like their bagels. So now we have a decision to make, Einstein's or Starbucks. What first appeared as a barrier or an obstacle turned out to be an opportunity. So I thought about this. Who names something a barrier or limitation, and who puts it in place? Well, one might point out that in the case of this morning's marathon, that ones who put the blockade in place were the ones who were in charge of the event. It was the manager of the local Starbucks who locked the door and posted the sign. But when we think about it, we realize that while it is true that this is their barrier, it is up to us to determine if we accept it as ours. What I mean is this. Did the marathon blockade keep you from coming to church this morning? Well, I would have to say it did not, because I'm looking out and I see you sitting here. Did that sign posted at Starbucks keep you from your morning coffee? No, it did not. You simply went elsewhere, perhaps even establishing a new habit. Attitude is the key to how we view and accept whatever happens to come our way. It is our attitude that defeats us and not the event itself. I overheard two individuals that were talking at the bus stop. One was telling her friend of her desire to take certain courses that she felt would lead to a promotion in her chosen line of work. Her friend, she was supportive and she encouraged to do whatever it was necessary to do so. But you know, at that point, the first individual began to reflect on what she had said, coming up with all the reasons why it would probably not work out. She already had a job. She didn't really know if she would have time to devote to school. She wasn't entirely sure that she had the money required for the tuition. Well, I could tell that while this seemed like a really good idea, she was not yet able to make the commitment ready that was necessary to see it through. And if it did not work out, I wondered if she would realize that it really wasn't the lack of money or time that derailed her plans, but that she herself had placed the restrictions. When I considered the idea of restrictions, I thought about Moses and how he must have looked at his situation. Now, if you remember, it all started when God called upon Moses, informing him that he wanted him to go to Egypt and lead his people out of slavery. Well, Moses, he did not feel up to the task, and he placed many barriers in his way, telling God all of the reasons he could not take on this assignment. He really had no idea how he would go about doing this. God said, "I will be with you." Moses persisted, "I am not eloquent of speech. I am of a slow tongue. How could I possibly convince Pharaoh to let your people go?" So God said, "Okay, take your brother Aaron with you." Finally, Moses agreed to go to Egypt with no real idea about what he was doing or how he would do it. And you know, really, it wasn't easy. We read of his experience with Pharaoh. We read of the plagues and the promises until Pharaoh finally relented and said they could go. But they had barely begun their journey when Pharaoh had second thoughts. He realized what he had done, and he decided it had been a bad decision. What had he been thinking? So he immediately sent his soldiers, his horses, and chariots after the Hebrew people, all with the intent of bringing them back to Egypt. Now the children of Israel, they saw them approaching, and they were afraid. But you see, by this time, Moses had had an attitude adjustment. During his time with Pharaoh, he discovered that God had indeed been with him. And so he told the people, "Fear not, stand still, and see the salvation of the Lord which he will show to you today. The Lord shall fight for you, and he shall hold your peace. Then there was that problem concerning the barrier called the Red Sea. Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and the Lord caused the sea to part, allowing the people to go through on dry land. Now, when they had arrived on the other side, the sea returned to its original strength, throwing the Egyptians into the midst. What happened was that Moses discovered he could rely on his God that had never left him. Still, we read on, and the remaining journey, it was not an easy one. Beyond Pharaoh, beyond those plagues and the Red Sea, there was that time spent in the wilderness where it appeared that the people would perish for lack of food and water. And so the people complained to Moses, lamenting the fact that they had ever left Egypt in the first place. It's true that they may have been in servitude in Egypt, but at least they had food to eat and a place to sleep. They suggested that perhaps they should go back to what was familiar, to what they knew that they could count on. But Moses, he was not moved by their supplication. Each time a need arose, Moses turned to God, manna fell, and the need was met. The lesson that I am learning is this. There will be barriers and limitations in our personal time of experience. And a part of us may lament the fact that we will not be able to overcome them. We might even ask, perhaps it really is best that we remain where we are and content ourselves with that familiar routine. At least we know what to expect. Now, when we read the story in the Bible, we recall that in some respects, the Hebrew people wanted to leave the place of servitude, but they themselves did not know how to get out of their situation. They simply did not have the consciousness that would allow them to move beyond where they were. All they really knew was the role of the servant, always looking to someone else to save them. And so they cried out to God to take them out of this condition. God answered the call. He sent them the one he knew had the vision to accomplish this task. He sent them Moses. Now, if you remember at first, Moses did not look at himself in this way, but God did, and that is all that really mattered. There will be times when we have the consciousness of the Hebrew people, stuck where we are, looking to others to get us out of whatever mess we happen to find us in. And at first, we may be like Moses when God first called upon him. Our higher self, Christ, dwells in us. And there are times when this self calls us to come out from where we are and go in a different direction. We may say that we feel inadequate, not up to the task of meeting what appears as our Pharaoh. Now, Pharaoh takes on many forms. Perhaps it is sickness or a lack of supply. Maybe we are unable to make friends and we are lonely. When we say we want out of the condition that keeps us stuck, we continue to be its slave. We simply have not yet discovered that God is with us and that we can rely on him to do the work. And so we continue in the same old way. We continue to look to the one with the vision that can help us in a material way. So we ponder that story about Moses, and we wonder how Moses was able to go from being that one who felt inadequate to the one with the vision that allowed him to say, "Fear ye not, stand still and see the salvation of the Lord." What allowed him to step out from his place of limitation and declare that God is in this place? You see, we are certain if we could figure out how he did it, that perhaps we too can do the same. Well, I thought about it, and this is my conclusion. I think that it took the Hebrew time of experience with Pharaoh, the appearance of the plagues, the parting of the Red Sea, to allow Moses to discover he could rely on God. In his time of deep experience, he discovered he was not alone, that God had indeed gone with him. God had said, "I will be with you." And now Moses knew that this was so. I believe it was this conviction that allowed him to withstand his time in the wilderness. If we are to make any progress at all, we too must have that Egyptian experience. When we look back over our lives, we admit that the only time we made any progress at all was in that time of deep experience. That time when we had Pharaoh on one side and the Red Sea on the other. That time when we saw no way out of our situation. Like Moses, we too must meet our Pharaoh, stating our case for wanting to make our change. There may be many reasons why this won't be possible, many barriers and limitations, but we persist because we heard the voice of the inner presence, and we know we are not alone. To the degree that we persevere, to that degree will we be successful. The persistence must be in us, staying true to the conviction that God is in this place. And then we too may watch the salvation of the Lord. The Lord shall fight for us, and we may hold our peace. Right in the midst of the trouble, we become the observer. The Red Sea parts. The barriers, they come down. And we find us in a different place, going in another direction. And yet we realize there is still work to be done. We have witnessed God's help in our Egypt time of experience. We have witnessed the removal of barriers and limitations. And we also remember that the Hebrew people have had one more step in their journey from slavery to the promised land. It was called the wilderness experience. The human aspect of us requires this time as the necessary process that brings clear realization. I personally do not think it is possible to escape the wilderness experience. In his book, The Revealing Word, Charles Fillmore defines the wilderness experience in this way. In individual consciousness, the wilderness is symbolic of the multitude of undisciplined and uncultivated thought. Oh yes, we may have come out of that Egypt experience, but we still have to deal with us, with our thoughts, our attitudes, and our opinions. We may know of the indwelling presence, but we are still walking on this earth plane, and that ego, it continues to knock getting our attention, demanding entrance into our consciousness, insisting that it rules as our experience. The wilderness is a non-enlightened time for us. Oh yes, we have our glimpses of heaven, of the promised land, and we may even feel that we have visited, but we were not able to stay there. The appearance, it seemed real, and we find ourselves drawn to it. Now, I think this is especially true when we first come out of a trying experience and we discover we have made it. Things seem to be going okay, and we are tempted to sit back and relax a little bit. We don't see any barriers in the horizon, so maybe we do not need to call on God at this time. And of course, this is our mistake. God said, "I will be with you." He did not mean he would be with us just in those times when we need something. We do not pull God off of a shelf when we need him, and then put him back on the shelf when the need is met. The indwelling presence should be a vital aspect of every conscious moment, communing in the sanctuary of inner being. When we do this, we include God in everything we do. We do not leave our home without the conviction that God goes before us, guiding, directing our paths. Every thought, every task is given to that place of inner being, asking for determination and decision. As long as we are living in this world, there will be the appearance of barriers and limitations, and yes, there may be a Pharaoh lingering, and staying in the shadows, but we will not be moved. Written in our soul's awareness are the words, "I will be with you." And that is all we really need to know. This is the living reality for those who practice his presence and then live the truth they know to be their identity. It is every man's and every woman's destiny to live in this way. Let us choose this day to do so. This morning we have the opportunity to turn within. "Speak, Lord, I am listening." Would you join me now in our closing meditation? As we close our worship service, we pause a moment to become still and turn within. In the time of solitude, we are alone with God. Time stands still. The world melts away. The infinite presence, it loves us and cares for us. There's no need for words or chatter, just the quiet receptivity of the willing heart to listen in an inward way. In quietness and confidence shall be our strength. Fear not, stand still, see the salvation of the Lord. Right where we are, God is there. In the coming week, let us go often to the quiet place for guidance and assurance. Let us take time to be holy, to lift our eyes on high and abide in his kingdom. As we leave the sanctuary this morning, we give thanks for the opportunity to come together and worship in his name. Go in peace. Amen. May the Lord bless you and keep you. May he cause his light to shine upon you and be gracious unto you. Turn within, acknowledge him, so that he may lift your consciousness and give you his peace. Amen.
Mm-hmm.